From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, we're talking about Columbia's April 5th municipal election with the two candidates for mayor, Skip Walther and Brian Treese. From development across Columbia to the size of the police force, both candidates share their views and plans on issues that affect us all. But first, let's get some context for these elections. I spoke with Scott Swafford from the Columbia Missourian.
Both Mr. Walther and Mr. Treese have been involved in civic affairs for years. Skip has been a member of the Downtown Community Improvement District. Brian Treese is a member of the Downtown Leadership Council and the Historic Preservation Commission and has been on both those for several years. So they're very well known among people who pay attention to civic affairs. I think Columbia really is quite fortunate to have two very good candidates for mayor.
Are there any issues on which their points of view are quite different?
Well, I think across all three races, one of the primary issues that's come up in this campaign, and it's really no surprise, is how we can increase the staff level at the Columbia Police Department. We had a ballot issue in November of 2014 in which the city tried to get a property tax increase that would have funded a significant number of new officers. I believe it was 40 over 6 years. But that failed miserably. Nevertheless, you have a consensus not only among political candidates, but it seems across the community that we need more police in Columbia. We're way below the national average on the number of police officers we have. So every candidate across all three races suggests that we need more police. The big difference is how we're going to pay for them. In the mayor's race, Mr. Treese has proposed earmarking annual growth in the city's budget for public safety, primarily police officers. He believes that would be enough to significantly increase the police force over time. And he has said we need as many as 52 more police officers to get up to snuff. Mr. Walther, however, is a bit skeptical that strategy would work because he notes that money for public safety comes from the city's general fund. And I don't want to get too far off into the weeds, but he says that annual growth in the general fund is simply not going to be enough to add more than two or three police officers per year. So it's his feeling that we're going to have to come up with a new source of revenue to significantly increase the police department staff. And I think, several of the other candidates would say the same thing.
And what are some of the other major issues at play aside from the police force, which sounds like it's disproportionately small compared to other comparable cities?
Well, there's been a lot of conversation about development trends downtown.
Right.
And that's probably no surprise to anybody. We see a proliferation of student apartments, and we've got more apartment complexes on the way. Particularly Rise Apartments is going to go up at 9th and Locust Streets. Mm-hmm. What we've heard from the developer, Fields Holdings, is that that's going to be a 10-story apartment complex marketed not only to students but also to professionals and even families who are interested in living downtown. They haven't submitted any specific plans to the city yet, but we're told that's going to be a 10-story apartment complex. And then we anticipate apartments being built also on the Bengals property at 6th and Elm. And then you've got other apartment complexes that are under construction over in the Turner Avenue area. So in terms of the election, Mr. Treese, who's running for mayor, suggests that what the city needs to do is reestablish what we call a sufficiency of services test that used to exist in the city, in downtown before 1988, which would require that anybody building residential developments downtown needs to demonstrate that adequate utilities are in place before that project is built so that we don't overstretch our sewers, our electric, our stormwater. Mr. Walther, however, he's a big fan of this development. He thinks it has brought downtown back to life. He notes that downtown is thriving compared to what it used to be back in the 1980s, early 1990s. And the density he thinks is a good thing. So he wants to be very cautious about it, putting any terrible restrictions on that.
So it does sound like Treese and Walther are of different minds about development or how it needs to be controlled or fostered downtown.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. And I think you see the same thing in the third ward race where Carl Scala is He's quite concerned about these development trends and wants to get a handle on them. Whereas Mr. Luther, most of his campaign is all about promoting economic development, particularly downtown. He sees that as a way to increase sales tax revenue and pay for some of these basic services like public safety that everybody acknowledges we need. Then you have Ian Thomas, who he's kind of on both sides of this. He likes the fact that we have a lot of students living downtown, but he does think that it's not a culturally healthy thing for student housing to dominate downtown. The other thing that's going on in the background here is the city is right now studying a proposal to put in place what we call form-based zoning. Part of the problem with the, I guess we could call it a problem, or part of the challenge for the council in regulating these student apartment developments is that the C2 zoning that's in place downtown allows these developers to do these things, and the council doesn't have much say in it. Now, if we were to adopt this form-based zoning code that's being tested as we speak, and it's been developed by the consultant Clarion Associates over the past couple of years, that would address some of the issues that folks have with these student apartment developments downtown and give the council a much higher degree of control over what's going to be built and what's not. So you have Mr. Treese in the mayor's race, Mr. Scala in the third ward race, and Mr. Thomas in the fourth ward race are all very much in favor of form-based zoning. Mr. Walther is a little more cautious. Again, he wants to make sure we test these things and try to determine what sort of impact this would have not only on development, but what benefit it would have for the city before we put that in place.
And this may be a stupid question.
No such thing.
I have come to believe that it may exist. On the national political level, there's obviously this big partisan divide, but there doesn't seem to be one at the local political level.
Yeah, you know, in Columbia, we don't have our city council elections are nonpartisan, so people don't declare I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, I'm an independent. What we've seen in Columbia over the years that I've been here is the political divide seems to be between folks who are very gung-ho on economic development, growth, that sort of thing, and folks who want to be a little bit more cautious about that. I wouldn't call it anti-growth. Some people call it smart growth. Yes, we want to grow, but we want to grow in a very controlled way and make sure that developers are paying their share of the infrastructure costs that their developments bring with them. So that seems to be where the real divide is. Are developers paying their fair share or not?
That was Columbia, Missourian editor Scott Swofford. And next we'll hear from both the candidates for mayor. First, let's hear from Skip Walther, who is an attorney practicing in Columbia and a candidate for mayor. Could you tell me about why you started to run right now?
Sure. You know, I'll tell you why I didn't start to run, and that's I don't have an agenda, really, and I don't have any special interest group backing me. But what did compel me to get in the race is that I've seen a divisiveness and a partisanship. You see it on the national level and the state level, and it seems to have filtered down to the local level. I think that just needs to stop. We can do much better than that. We don't need to continue to fight with each other. What we should be doing is talking to each other, being transparent in the way that we share information, get as many people to the table as possible, and make decisions based upon consensus, if possible, and compromise, if not. And if we use an effective process, then our citizens should feel proud of the process as well as the result. And that's why I'm running for mayor.
And what are the things that you think are becoming subjects of a partisan divide in Columbia that you'd like to work on uniting people over?
We've had what I've been calling the development wars. You know, you've got people who are in favor of development, people who are opposed to it, and there's no communication. We had a development fee tax measure a couple of years ago that failed, and I believe it failed because the proponents of the tax measure made no effort to communicate with those who were going to pay the fee. Now, I've been asked to participate in promoting tax measures for a long time now for the city of Columbia, and Ray Beck, the old city manager, told me in no uncertain terms, and I mean, it's just very clear, you cannot ask anybody in Columbia to pay more in tax unless you explain everything to them and you get them on board, you get their buy-in. The development fee measure, the proponents of that measure didn't do that. They didn't get buy-in, and consequently, there was this bitter fight, and the tax measure failed. I believe that virtually everybody in town understands that development fees need to go up, but we need to talk to each other about it. Get everybody to the same table and talk about the pros and cons, come up with a program, and move forward.
And what are development fees?
Development fees are special fees that are charged to people who develop property. So City of Columbia relies on a variety of income sources. You know, you pay your electric bill or your water and light bill, your trash bill, things of that nature. Those are what are called enterprise funds. The city also relies upon sales tax revenue and property tax revenue to a limited extent. And those taxes pay for an awful lot of city services. Then there are development fees that are charged just to those who develop subdivisions or buildings, and they pay an extra fee because when you develop property, you are utilizing existing resources like streets and sewers and electric lines, things of that nature that the city and the citizens of Columbia have already paid for. So it makes sense that the developers, when they're taking advantage of the existing infrastructure, makes sense that they pay their fair share.
I think the police force here is relatively quite a bit smaller than in some other similarly sized small cities. Would you want to increase the size of the police force?
Yes, I think that's an appropriate thing to do. There are lots of ways to look at this. Historically, Columbia, even though there was kind of a spike in crime within the last year, we're still at a 30-year low in terms of crime statistics on the one hand. On the other hand, we are understaffed at the police department, and we are understaffed at the fire department. From the fire department standpoint, it would make our firefighters much safer if we could put three people on a truck instead of two, just simply because of the way they do their job, that would make their job a much safer workplace, work environment. And we all benefit when we keep our public safety officers safe. The police force, you know, it depends on how you look at the statistics, but we may be 30 or 40 police officers short of similar size towns like Columbia in the Midwest, according to FBI statistics. Mm-hmm. So we really are understaffed. But then the question becomes, well, how do we pay for the officers? At $100,000 an officer, we don't have $3 million to spend each and every year right now. So I think the solution is to incrementally or gradually increase the police force by a couple of full-time positions a year until we get to a point where we have caught up. There's just not the money in the budget, contrary to what my opponent says. There isn't the money in the budget to pay for 25 police officers this year or next year. I mean, it's just not doable unless we have a tax increase, and I'm not sure that we want to do that.
So to add two or three officers a year, would that involve some sort of tax increase?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, there is some growth to the city budget on an annual basis. The general fund, which is the fund that pays for an awful lot of city services like the police force and the fire department, the general fund is about $84 million. And between 2015 and 2016, the general fund increased by about $400,000. If you assume $100,000 per officer, that increase, if 100% of the increase was allocated to police, that might pay for four. But frankly, it's probably closer to two because of the restrictions placed on the city revenue. So you could increase two a year just because we have this natural revenue growth. But then you're dealing with, well, that means that none of the other city departments are experiencing seeing more income come in. And when we see that Columbia has gone from a town of 100,000 population in 2009 to 121,000 in 2016, you know that with a 20% increase in the population of Columbia in such a short period of time, that's putting pressure on our building department, our public works. You know, we need more people to clean the streets, to snow remove, to pick up trash, to do all the things that a city needs to do and the citizens expect the city to do. So the financial issues affecting the City of Columbia are complex. They're difficult to solve, and that's why we need effective leadership who can bring people to the table and get both, you know, if there are two sides to an issue, get both sides talking to each other and try to arrive at an intelligent solution.
Would you in any way support an increase to property or sales tax?
It depends on what purpose.
Do you foresee any purpose that you would want to do that for?
Well, we do that occasionally. The recent tax measures have failed. Again, I was taught a long time ago that in order to be successful in presenting a tax measure to the public has to have buy-in. They have to agree this is the right thing to do. And so if the need arises, I can envision myself as mayor going to the public and communicating the need and then assessing the public reaction. Ultimately, the public votes for or against a tax increase. The mayor doesn't make that choice. Neither does the city council or anybody on city staff. It's a public vote. We can know by effective communication what the public believes is appropriate or not, and ultimately it is the public's decision.
Are there any other issues aside from development and police and fire that you think you'd really like to address as mayor?
You know, there's been a long simmering feud between neighborhoods and those who are seeking rezoning requests or land use issues is what we call them. Very often, people who come to the city council and request a zoning change or some favor, for lack of a better term, from city council, and it has the potential to affect a neighborhood. The neighborhood typically doesn't have the resources that the developer, if we mm-hmm. want to call the developer that person, typically doesn't have the resources that a developer has. What I would like to see the city do would be to create a position that is called an ombudsman or ombuds to avoid the gender issue. That person would be charged with advising neighborhood groups. That person would be charged with understanding these requests as they come in, and the ombuds would communicate to the neighborhood associations, provide the neighborhood associations with information and potentially resources so that the neighborhoods could more effectively communicate with the developers who are trying to affect their neighborhood. That would level the playing field. Mm-hmm. And number one, it would level the playing field. Number two, it would make the process a better process because with more open communication and more effective information dissemination, both sides would be better off, I think. Now, I don't think this would be something that would, I think it would be good for both sides if both sides were represented by effective advocates.
That was Skip Walther, one of the two candidates in the race to become the next mayor of Columbia. Next, we'll hear from Brian Treese, who is a member of a government and public affairs firm in Jefferson City and a candidate for mayor. Could you tell me a little bit about why you decided to run for mayor and why you chose now as the moment to do it?
Sure, and it's great to be on KBIA again. You know, Columbia is a great city, but we have a few challenges right now. And, you know, when we started looking at some of the issues that are facing not just downtown Columbia, but all of our neighborhoods and how Columbia is growing, those issues really began to rise to the city council level. And, you know, I chair the Downtown Leadership Council. That's the group that the city council asked to look at our infrastructure issues. And what we found was surprising. Our sewer and water and electrical capacity hasn't kept pace with the rate of our city's growth. Our police and firefighters haven't kept pace with the rate of our city's growth. And, you know, I felt like it was time to really step up and tackle these issues head on.
So what do you think are the major issues beyond development that are facing Columbia today? Development definitely being at the top of everyone's mind. Are there others that you'd really like to address as mayor?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Columbia's population is set to double in the next 30 years.
Wow.
And if we're going to be one of the fastest growing cities in the Midwest, we need a blueprint. And as mayor, I want to use that blueprint to really build on what's great about Columbia. I mean, I think all of us have a similar story that we came here, sometimes to college, sometimes for work, sometimes we were born here. But, you know, what keeps us here are those things that we love. And I think that vanishing face of Columbia and everything that we love about this town is under attack right now. And I think one of the things as mayor I want to do is build upon what's great about Columbia and really begin to make those improvements by investing in our neighborhoods, adding more community policing to keep our families safe, but also making city government open, honest, and transparent.
In terms of development, what do we need to do to attain your vision of growth, of positive growth?
Well, I think my vision is that of balanced growth, that incentivizes the types of development that that we want to occur, but with all development, making sure that it pays its fair share. Because right now, our neighborhoods and frankly, taxpayers are subsidizing a certain type of development in a certain part of town, and we're all paying the price for that, whether that's delayed sewer improvements in our oldest neighborhoods or, you know, fast-tracking high-voltage power lines in our newest neighborhoods. It seems like we're cannibalizing our neighborhoods just to subsidize a certain type of growth and development. And I think we need to take a longer view. I think we need to make those much-needed and delayed infrastructure improvements that really prepares Columbia for the next 20 and 30 years, but then balance the scales, if you will, to have a more equitable proportion of those costs borne by those that are generating the demand for that capacity.
And when you talk about a certain kind of development, are you talking about sort of high-rise student complexes downtown?
It is. In fact, I've probably knocked on 4,000 doors throughout this campaign, and I haven't had a single person tell me they would like to see more student housing downtown. Hmm. And city government should not be in the business of dictating, what type of development occurs, but I think we can set the expectations for how that development occurs, what it looks like, and to make sure that we are maintaining the balance that we all want in our downtown. I've always regarded Columbia's downtown as the front porch of our community. And that's where my wife and I like to go to celebrate wedding anniversaries and birthday parties and enjoy the art scene and the Missouri Theater there. And I get my hair cut at Tiger Barbershop. We like to go to Butch's on Saturday. And I think everybody sees those things that they love about Columbia threatened right now.
And what do you think technically and legally needs to happen to maintain those things that people love about downtown?
Well, sure. The Downtown Leadership Council, which I chair, was part of the effort to update Columbia's outdated zoning ordinance. We have a Euclidean zoning code that was developed in 1950 when our population was 50,000 people. And clearly we've grown beyond that. So one of the things that we have called for is closing the zoning loophole that allows unlimited development with no parking requirements without any indication of whether there are even adequate utilities in place before that development occurs. So I think that's the first step. The second step is to update that zoning code, and one of those concepts is what's called a form-based code. Instead of regulating the use of that property in terms of either residential or commercial or retail, we reward a mixed use mm-hmm. that has a balance of retail on the first floor, some parking embedded in integral to the structure, and then a use of either office or residential above. But I really think, you mentioned student housing. I really think there's a market here for young professionals, attorneys, doctors, lawyers that want to live downtown, but also senior citizens that may have gone to college here, that want to come back and be close to hospitals and close to the university that they love and are alumni of. And enjoy Mizzou sports, and they want to have that feeling of living downtown in a vibrant, diverse, safe community. And I think we need to incentivize that type of development in a way that meets the community's expectations.
And so, if incentives are sort of the carrot, is there a stick as well? Is it to make it more expensive for developers to do certain things?
Well, sometimes, and that's not where this code goes, and certainly doesn't. That's not what it contemplates. If anything, I think this type of development code attracts the types of quality investments and quality projects we should all want. Because right now, developers aren't going to want to come to Columbia and invest several million dollars to build a robust development if there is a concern that their adjoining neighbor next door to them can throw up whatever they want. And so as a result, we're seeing some projects that are maybe, build it, fill it, sell it, take the money, get out of town. And that's not the type of development that we want to encourage and reward. At the same time, downtown is not just the only place where growth is occurring. It's also occurring on our fringe. And when the city makes infrastructure investments, there are certain economies of scale that are generated by having compact investments in the stems of those water lines, utility lines, sewer infrastructure. And when development occurs outside of that urban service area, I think there should be a rate differential that takes into account the added cost the city is going to incur by extending our water lines outside the city limits or outside that predefined urban service area.
It's true. There's a lot of talk about growth downtown, but the growth on the fringes is just as extraordinary, if not more so, I think.
Yeah, and that also drives my real priority, and that is making sure that we're making the concomitant investments in our police and fire protection. Right now, Department of Justice suggests that we're down understaffed by as many as 52 police officers. The firefighters tell me we need two additional fire stations. And when you talk about growth in the periphery of Columbia, we all pay the cost of that in delayed response times. And, it takes 19 minutes to get from Auburn Hills down to Thornbrook, for our police officers. And our response times for the fire department are ticking up. And in a crisis, in an emergency like that, seconds count.
And speaking of more police and more fire, of course, there's cost associated with that. I believe that generally the money for police comes from the general fund. Is there enough money there to significantly increase the police and fire forces?
I think there is on a rolling year basis. We can make those incremental investments. The city has a billion-dollar budget. About half of that is dedicated funds on the water and light side that if we balance those balance those development costs, we can invest in the infrastructure we need there. That leaves about $480 million on the discretionary side. A lot of that is earmarked for voter-approved parks sales tax issues. But what I want to do is earmark the growth in that budget. Right now, that growth is around 2.5% to 3%, and that's attributable to more people moving to town, higher sales tax revenue, from SEC football games. Earmarking that growth to really make those investments incrementally in additional law enforcement officers. And I want to be clear, with or without a tax increase, we have to prioritize our public safety spending. It's the number one priority that citizens want their city government doing. And frankly, if we don't get that right, the public isn't going to have confidence in those items that some of us may want the city to invest in, like parks and rec and trails and some of those issues. So I do want to make sure that we're making the proper investments in these back-to-basic infrastructure improvements, but also our public safety and fire protection.
That was Brian Treese, one of two candidates for mayor of Columbia. Elections will be held April 5th. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, conversations in our community. I want to thank our producers, Katie Eisterhold, George Schramm, and Christopher Beyer. And of course, thank you to our guests, Scott Swofford, Skip Walther, and Brian Treese. Our music is Montana Skies. We also have some good news to share. Intersection will now air at our regular time, which is 6:30 on Monday evenings, and then again on Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. So if you miss us Monday, you can just tune in Wednesday. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.